Welcome to the Art of Slowing Down to Quantum Leap podcast that I created especially for conscious introvert entrepreneurs. And if you desire to grow and quantum scale without the hustle and are ready to discover the missing pieces to effortlessly running a soul-aligned business, then this is for you. And I'm your host, Annalena Fuchs, a human design and energetic alignment coach. And my mission with this podcast is to provide you with a shortcut to your most aligned path to success and financial freedom using a powerful combination of human design, science, and spirituality. And I myself have shifted from working 9 to 5 to now enjoying the freedom of creating things on my own terms. And I want to help you do the same. Welcome everyone to another episode of the Art of Slowing Down podcast. It's your host here, Annalena. As always, I'm very delighted to be with you all. And today I have a beautiful guest with me. She reached out to me recently. Her name is Zoe Greco. And I'm going to just introduce you briefly and then we're going to take it away. Okay.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So Zoe is an intuitive mentor and spiritual coach, and her company is called Merhipsey Healing. Blending the mermaid, the hipsy and gypsy, right? How did you say that? Healing,
yeah,
and
exactly.
Gypsy. Okay, that's how you said it. I love that. So she's also an intuitive empath and spiritual coach who uses her gifts of clairvoyance, healing, and empowerment to help individuals step into their purpose, gain clarity on their lives, and find fulfillment and abundance in all forms. And through the Mystic Rebel podcast, her intuition activation mentorship, and through her twice sold out Mystic Rebel Oracle and Crystal decks, Zoe helps others experience healing, discover community, and feel far less alone in their spiritual and personal journey. Wow, that's so important. I love that. And she also teaches others that we all have the power of intuition and can develop it with the use of many spiritual tools and modalities to manifest a life of endless possibilities. You know what I love? Endless possibilities. It's not this like the life you love or desire. It's a new possibility. So welcome, Zoe. So happy to have you.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah. So I would love to hear, to kind of kickstart this conversation. So you're here. It's all about intuition, right? That's your magic sauce to help people activate their intuition. And I want to start with this question because I think sometimes people are like, well, I'm just not intuitive, or this is something just some special people may have. So I would love to hear from you that this is actually something we all can access, and how can people practice that so they can access that, which we all have, that connection to our intuition?
That's such a great question. You know, I feel really fortunate to have been able to stay connected to my own intuition throughout my life. I didn't have any interruptions. And I always describe my intuitive journey as being uninterrupted or undisrupted. Like, I just had, especially a mother who identified me as an intuitive being from an early age and wanted to support that and nurture it without, you know, being overly exploitive in any way. She was just wanting to support me and being in touch with my gifts. But as I got older and I, you know, talked about this with others, even in childhood and then beyond, I realized that everyone was like, either didn't believe in it, which is pretty common, or they felt a lot of like envy, like, oh, I wish I could do that. And I really feel that one of my main messages is that you don't have to cultivate intuition just so that you can be a professional intuitive. Cultivating intuition is so incredibly useful for anyone. It's what helps us to access those endless possibilities, to tap into the infinite and see which direction we want to go in. So ultimately, we're all born with intuition. It's this internal compass that points us toward our desires, destiny, our, you know, milestones that we're meant to experience here on earth, but also toward our most inner deep desires and hopes and wishes. And the thing that I always like to say is that this compass is the tool that we're given to find our way back home to truth, to source, to the source within ourselves, to the source within each other. And the needle on that compass I have found in my life and that I find through working with thousands of clients is joy. The thing that sparks joy for us, the thing that inspires us, the thing that makes us feel the most alive. And I know your focus is entrepreneurship. And as a spiritual entrepreneur, this is actually something that I talk about a lot. I think it's really important to help people understand that our intuition is what helps us find our own unique definition of success, whatever that looks like, whether that's being a stay-at-home mom, whether that's being a CEO, whether that's being a professional psychic, whatever that looks like, it helps guide you toward your abilities, interests, and helps you find your home within yourself. And for me personally, being a spiritual entrepreneur, I feel a lot of responsibility to access my own levels of success so that I can be an example of the fact that this work can be lucrative and can be, you know, it can support your entire life. And also, in case you don't want to be a professional psychic, but you want to do something else, if you want to have your own entrepreneurial journey, or if you want to climb a corporate ladder, either way, no matter what you're doing, being connected to your intuition will serve you, whether it's in the boardroom, being able to read the energy of those that you're trying to negotiate with, whether that is in a conversation intimately like this, where I'm picking up on your energy and trying to match you and meet you where you are. It just helps create deeper rapport between people as well. So there's a million different uses for intuition, but ultimately, it is a gift that we are all born with, that we all possess. There's nothing that is meant to block you from this gift. But unfortunately, we live in a society and a culture that confuses, demonizes, and construes, like misconstrues and convolutes the purpose of intuition. And so people think it is something inaccessible or outside of themselves. And so my mission in this life is just to say, that's not true. Actually, you can have it. You already do. And I would love to teach you how to more deeply connect to that. So a long-winded answer to your question, but hopefully it makes sense.
No, I love it. And now I kind of imagine some of the listeners may be like, okay, what is my intuition?
So our intuition at the core is the voice within us that guides us toward our inner truth. It is the voice of our own higher self. It is the voice of source. It is the voice of your guides, your guardians, your angels. It is the voice that leads you toward your authenticity, toward your experience that you are meant to have in this lifetime and beyond this lifetime. And there are several different ways that we can receive intuitive download. There are four primary psychic senses, and then there are four additional psychic senses, but I don't want to overwhelm anybody by going into too many, but the four primary psychic senses would be clairvoyance or psychic sight, clairaudience or psychic hearing, claircognizance or psychic knowing, and then clairsentience. Some people interchangeably say clairempathy, which would be psychic feeling.
Yeah.
So psychic feeling can be both physical and emotional. And so I like to just plump it together into clairsentience as someone who is clairsentient. It's definitely something that I feel from both the physical and the emotional. One of the things that I really love to focus on in my work is helping people connect with and identify their primary psychic sense. Because once you understand your intuitive language, it's so much easier to begin to create a dialogue between yourself and the divine. So there's so many different methods and tools and things that I would recommend for that. And we can get into that too. But ultimately, the first thing that you need to do is become self-aware and begin to recognize how you receive intuitive information. And you might not even recognize it as being intuition at first. For instance, claircognizance, clear knowing, that gift is really hard for people to accept because you just know things and you don't know why, and you don't necessarily have to have any sort of evidence. Yes, exactly. I like to tell this story because I think it's a good example of claircognizance, but I was once driving down the streets of Tempe, Arizona through, you know, Arizona State University with a friend of mine, and I could see a man on the sidewalk, and he was moving at such a speed and he was like at such a height that I knew he was probably on a bike of some kind, but I couldn't see him because there was a line of parked cars and he just was out of sight. And I turned to my friend and I said, "That guy is not on a bike. He's on a unicycle. He's on a blue unicycle, and I know it." And as soon as he came into our sight, sure enough, he was on a unicycle. And I like to use this example because there is no even reason that I should or could have known that. But beyond that, it didn't even really serve a purpose. Like, what did, like, in what way did it help me to know that that man was on a unicycle? But it was just a fun little way for me to go, oh, my intuition is active. Like, that is one of the ways that I connect with spirit. I just know things. Another fun one I like to tell is that same friend was apartment hunting. And we went into this really cute space and she was totally sold on it. And I said, "You can totally live here, but like that stove is going to catch on fire, no question." And the landlord happened to be there with us and he was like, I just put that in. It's a brand new stove. You can see it still has like the sticker on it from the store. Like, it's brand new." And I said, "Totally. It's still going to catch on fire. I know it. So do with that what you will." And she was like, "Whatever. Like, I don't think so. I'm going to take the place." And sure enough, 5 months later, it caught on fire. And she called me and was like, "I guess you really are psychic because you totally did catch on fire." So, for instance, these are just little ways that my intuition let me know that something was true or something was going to happen. And that one is pretty hard for people to accept. But ultimately, when you can begin to become aware or connected to your intuitive language, you begin to recognize how it speaks to you all the time. And as you begin to recognize that, you can also form a relationship of trust with your ability. And that is where the work can really happen. So, for those who are like, "I don't even think I have anything," I promise you do. You definitely do. And it's just about giving yourself the space and time to observe it within yourself and then begin to develop a relationship with that ability to trust it, to cultivate it, and to allow it to grow.
Yeah, I love that. So there were lots of things I want to pick up from. I think the first one is, you mentioned this, right? Your primary sense of intuition. So that also means that we can access all of them, I guess. It's just one is mostly prevalent, right? The
Exactly.
most strong and intense. And because I love to make here a little bit the connection with human design, right? In human design, we have all these different authorities. You and I, we have sacral authority, for example. We have that in common. And I have even learned through working with lots and lots of clients that it's not the same way that sacral authority, because in the end of the day, it's the feeling in your body. Like, how do you, it's like you're not here to make decisions with the mind. It's something you can sense or feel or just know in your body, right? And when you go too much by the teachings, people think it's this like sacral ooh-hoo, right? And people are like, "I don't know, it doesn't feel right." And from the experimentation, I have learned it's totally different for people. Somebody, it's a whole body feeling. Other people see visuals, like a flower opening up or closing. Other people feel hot or cold. So that has really helped me, you know, because at the end of the day, what you're sharing is so similar what I'm trying to convey with human design, just in a different way. It's a different access point in some way. And I have also, because people then like, "Okay, but then the spleen, that's my intuition. Like, is the sacral and the spleen the same?" And I was like, "Well, they dance together. It's you know, but it always happens like in the body. It's not the logic mind that is here to make decisions, right?" Because I think that's what we have been fallen into or been conditioned to. And then, so the second thing I think that came up for me was, and now I have a blank, I think, because I don't remember what it was.
It may come back to us.
Yeah, right. Let me think, actually. So it was about the type of intuition. Yeah, no,
About clear
it's gonna
cognizance.
come. Yeah. No, I don't know, but I think it was the different types of intuition. Oh yeah, about the connection with the name of my podcast. Now it's coming to me. I had to slow down, you see. Because the self-awareness you were talking about, we have to slow down in order to become self-aware. I think, and that's also, you know, my podcast is all about slowing down.
Exactly.
That's what I work with all of my clients from. Obviously, we take action, right, at some point. But in order to take the right action, which is that soul-aligned, intuitive, guided action, you know, what I feel like for me, a visual that comes up, if I'm gonna keep living from my head, from my mind, where I'm not listening to the intuition, where I'm listening to what I have been taught, to what other people are preaching out there, I'm forcing myself to go on a path that may not be aligned for me. If it's hard, if it's not effortless, you know, if it's like there's a lot of resistance coming up. And then when I slow down, when I listen less to what everybody else is saying out there, especially in the coaching space, right? There's always this like, this is how you have to do it. This is a success strategy. I'm telling you how to sell, and we're gonna do it this way. And I'm gonna, it's almost you're getting like conditioned again, and not in a bad way. It's not like people do it on purpose, but I have learned for me that so disconnects me from who I am. I start comparing myself. I'm thinking, what's wrong with me? It takes out the joy, which you mentioned. Joy is the most important thing, which also correlates in human design. It's always do what brings you joy, do what lights you up, right? Same message here. And when I take that step into self-awareness through slowing down, I can then shift and realign to, oh, I'm supposed to go here. And then I feel like almost life pulls you into this effortless path where you're supposed to be, right?
Yes, definitely. I think slowing down is so important, especially because I find this so often with clients that one day in their life, it could be in their 20s, their 30s, their 40s, their 50s, their 60s, it could be at any point, they kind of just stop and look around and go, what have I been doing? Like, what have I been doing? What? It's almost as if they were just on autopilot for this whole time. And I think slowing down helps us recognize our emotions and what's happening within us, which is actually one of the gateways toward our intuition as well. Because for instance, I think of people who not only adhere to society's expectations, they're just like, okay, I'm supposed to, you know, get married, get a great job, buy a house, do all these things, have a bunch of kids, whatever. But if we slow down, we can ask ourselves, well, is that really what I want? Or is that what I'm being told I want? Is that what truly would be meaningful and mean success or mean fulfillment to me? Or is that what I'm feeling is expected of me? And then we end up, you know, on this other side of things where we don't slow down and we're experiencing all these feelings that we're then labeling as imposter syndrome, or, you know, not feeling like you fit in or not feeling like you belong. And rather than taking a moment to say, well, do I even want to be here? Is this even what I want to be doing? We're just so quick to label it. And I feel like, speaking of coaches, coaches love to talk about imposter syndrome. They're like, you're just not confident. You're just lacking confidence. And it's like, well, that could be, but if we actually take the time to slow down, maybe it's that I'm not feeling confident in my choice or my decision. I'm not feeling like this is actually what I want for myself. There's something inside of me that's saying, no, I don't want to do this. And I think one of the places I hear this the most, to be honest, even outside of career, which it comes up a lot with clients around career, is around marriages or relationships. I hear so often from people, the day I was going to get married or the day before I was supposed to get married, I just felt like everything in me was saying, don't do it, don't do it. And everyone told me I just had cold feet. Everyone told me I was just getting those regular pre-wedding jitters. But in reality, there was something inside of me that said, this isn't right for me. And I really believe that slowing down, creating space, creating stillness, creating silence is how we can actually hear ourselves. And for me personally, I really struggled to do that on my own. It took therapy, and I'm still doing it because I love having this designated space once a week to just like hear myself talk and just have someone to receive me. But it took therapy for me to slow me down. Also, plant medicine. I'm a big supporter of microdosing psilocybin, using cannabis to just regulate my nervous system, get me into a place of a little more chill, a little more stillness to find the peace within. And it, for other people, it could be breath work, it could be yoga, it could be Pilates, it could be a billion things. But ultimately, finding the path that helps us get still, get quiet, that's where the pieces, the answers, the solutions, all of that is just right there in the slow clarity. Because slow creates clarity, creates peace, creates awareness, it creates all the things that we need to make proper decisions. So I could not agree with you more on that.
Yeah, also what I love, what you shared, because I'm very big on this, and a lot of recent conversation has happened around this, you know, flexible or open-minded view of seeing things. Just like you mentioned that You love plant medicine, right? For me, it has never been a thing. But you present it in a way like, well, that is what works for me. It may not work for you. It may work for another person. And I think that's what's also happening so much in the self-development world, where people think, and obviously they mean well, right? It's I'm not even saying that, because they think it has, oh my God, this has changed my life. This has worked for me.
Totally.
Now they get this idea that this is now the truth for everybody, right? And we have to be so careful. Even like myself with human design, right? I had to learn very early on, because I was so excited about it, wanted to tell all my sisters about it, and then I realized, okay, maybe not. Let
Totally.
me take a step back and just let people come to me, right? That feel drawn to what I do when I talk about it, what I'm passionate about. And that was very successful. It has been very successful. But human design is not something that is that everybody needs, or that everybody will resonate with, right?
I think what you're talking about is so important, and I teach the same principle when I teach people how to use oracle cards or pull oracle cards. So I will make the circle back, but essentially people are always so afraid that they're going to pull the wrong card. They're like, "Well, what if I pull the wrong card and then I get a message that doesn't make sense to me?" Your question has a vibration and your answer has a matching vibration. Through the law of attraction, your question and your answer find each other. And I believe the same thing is true of our healing journey or our medicine. Your pain, your trauma, your wound, your unhealed self has a vibration. And the medicine that is meant for you has a complementary vibration. And through the law of attraction, they find each other. So for me personally, I talk about using plant medicine, but for the first 30 years of my life, I was very, very, very critical of any type of substance use. I was, demonizing of it without actually having any experience. I thought it was like a false gateway. I thought it was something that brought you to like false answers or false clarity. And once I started actually using it and experimenting with it in my early 30s, which I'm still in, I found so much judgment that I had been holding around these modalities. And that's not to say that this is for everybody, but it's to say that sometimes we're not in resonance with something until we absolutely need to be. I think if I had been using plant medicine in my 20s, I probably would have been misusing it. I probably would have been not necessarily falling into like any sort of substance abuse, but I don't think I would have revered it or understood it for what it can do for me. And I found it exactly when I was ready. And I found it exactly when it was ready for me, when we were ready for each other, and when we could do really meaningful work together. And I think the same is true of any modality. I found my therapist, when I was ready. I see all the time, my friends are out here trying things, doing things, and sometimes I'll circle back to it 10 years later because they're finally in a space of resonance with that medicine. So I agree with you. And human design is something that I think it's still so new. It feels like a baby modality because people just don't understand it. And they're so quick to be like, oh, just another mumbo jumbo thing. But when you really sit with human design and you really examine, your strengths, your gifts, your authority, all of these things that support who you are as a person, when you're ready to accept those qualities within yourself, or you're ready to accept that awareness of yourself, I think the same thing happens. You find that moment of resonance, but you might find people who are like, that's malarkey. And then, 6 months later, could be like, human design changed my life. I'm obsessed with human design. So I think we find our medicine exactly when we're meant to.
Yeah, I love that, because I have noticed that there's a lot of people out there. Sometimes they get very offended, or they have this like, oh, this is right, you are wrong. I'm like, how can we even say something like this? Because what is my truth may not be your truth. I mean, and human design is actually called the science of differentiation, right? It's not here to put us in a box or anything, but I think we can use anything, just like you said with the plant medicine, we can misuse that, right? We can get addicted to it, we can numb ourselves, all the things. And the same with human design. And I see it actually a lot. We can misuse it in a way where we're using it to justify certain things of why we can't do something, right? Or, well, I have had this so many times where people are like, well, I don't have this gate, I can't, or I don't have this channel, I cannot make money. Or, and It's, I guess, our level of consciousness where we're at, right? That is, no matter what we're using, it doesn't even matter. And I really resonate with what you say, that whenever we're ready for something, like the medicine, then it finds us in whatever tool that is. And also this conversation about, so therapy, coaching, you know, none of it is wrong, because it's oftentimes, well, only therapists or only psychologists should help people, right? And then there's other people that say, oh my God, I had the worst experience with therapy. Then you have other people, it changed their life when they did group therapy or something like that, right? And we cannot put all therapists and all things into one box and say it's bad because one person had a personally bad experience about it, right? Everything has its place and it's here to complement each other. And one person may have the most miraculous experience from having a coach and a therapist, and one person only is doing therapy, and another one goes on a journey in India for 3 months to meditate. I mean, who knows, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I
So,
think that's where intuition is so useful, is in helping us find the thing that resonates. Like, oh, I think I'm gonna try this out. I think I'm gonna take this class. And I think that's the one thing, is you do have to be willing to be experimental in order to find what is for you. You have to be willing to follow that inner voice that says, I think it's time for therapy, or I think I'm ready to try this out, or I think I'd like to know more about human design. It's really about tuning into that voice within, because that voice will always work to guide you toward your greatest good, always. That's the really cool thing about intuition. So rather than developing a relationship of fear with that inner voice, which I think a lot of people do because of media representation around intuition, like people think oracle cards are the same thing as like a Ouija board, or like, you know, and they think a Ouija board is the same thing as a portal to hell, which is like, none of that is true. Like, none of that is correct. So I think offering yourself the space and time to slow down and be willing to be experimental, courageous, try new things, explore new avenues, that's really the only way that we're actually going to access what is in resonance for us, the willingness to try things and find what is not in resonance, and be willing to be experimental and exploratory.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you. Absolutely. So when we got on, you mentioned something about, so intuition, right? Because it's, again, for people like, okay, then I'm gonna listen to my intuition. And I honestly think that's the most important of all in life, because it's differentiates you from having a life of struggle, unnecessary struggle, and making it too hard, trying to force things, versus a life that you're meant to live, that feels effortless, more joyful, where you're really in the lane of your purpose, right? You're swimming with the current instead of against it. And you mentioned the words authenticity, right? Because that's such a buzzword these days. And, you know, be your authentic self, find your authentic voice. I actually did a workshop about this myself a little while ago. So, how are the two connected? How can it support each other? And what does authenticity mean?
Such a good question. This is something that I feel really passionately about, and something that I myself have been navigating over the last several years. I feel like I was really doing some deep shadow work over the last 3 years. And for a while, I felt like I wasn't allowed to express my humanity. And what I mean by that is, I didn't feel like I was allowed to show my audience or my clients or the people who follow my work that I was human, and that I'm fallible, and I have moments, and I have wounds, and I'm unhealed, and I have things that I haven't totally navigated, because I thought that it would mean that I was no longer trustworthy, or that I was unreliable, or that I didn't know what I was talking about. And I've discovered actually that by being willing to be vulnerable, and by being willing to express authentically what I'm navigating and what I'm going through, it helps people, A, feel less alone, which is so important. We're not here on this earth by ourselves. If we were meant to be having a solo journey, we'd be on our own planet all by ourselves, but we're not. We're here with billions of other people. And I really believe that when you are a person like yourself or myself, who, you know, we have an audience, we have followers, we have people who and for clients too, who rely on the words that we say to help them navigate their lives, being authentic and being willing to say, you know, aside from the divine guidance you're receiving, human to human, I want to say this to you. And that's really important to me. I'm really glad that I was able to find the vulnerability within and the willingness to be able to become authentic, because I really believe that you can't take people to places you haven't gone yourself. And so if I want to support people in accessing their authenticity, I have to do it first. Like, I have to figure out how it works to then say, well, here's one of the ways that you can access it. If this resonates for you, right? This is the way that I've found my way to that. And essentially, what I've discovered is that authenticity is the willingness to be yourself unapologetically, clearly, courageously, but not just yourself, your most true self. And so for me, accessing my authentic self depended really strongly on...
I know,
I was doing this all the time now. Accessing
example.
myself that I was before I experienced my trauma and before I experienced my wounding, and sort of reclaiming those innate pieces of who I am, and then integrating those pieces with who I had become on the other side of that trauma. But there was this thing that I needed to do to help those two pieces of myself integrate, which was take the thing that was between them out of the equation, which was the story, the trauma itself, the attachment, the victimhood, the whatever, right? Whatever that was. And for me, it looked like this process of finally, I'll put it this way. I don't really publicly discuss my story or my trauma because it affects other people who don't choose to be public figures. And I want to respect that. So I don't really tell my story very often, but it doesn't matter because my story is the same as your story, just with a different face on it, you know, different words, but it's the same experience. I came here, I experienced wounding, it changed me, and then I decided to remove myself from that wounding. But for me, it was a process very much like reclaiming a house that had been occupied by squatters. So one day I realized that my house had become so full of squatters of pain. Pain had taken over my house. And it had taken over so much space within me that I took my true self and put her away because I didn't want her to have to live with the pain that was now occupying this body. And it wasn't until I started to let that pain out and evict that pain from my house that I could bring my true self back in. And when she came back in, she looked around at this house and said, "What did they do? They had ripped the doors off the hinges. They had graffitied the walls. They had damaged my house," right? Me, myself. And I then had to recognize that I had been operating out of all the things that that pain had left in my being, right? Pain had left behind all of these problems for me, and I was operating out of my problems, not out of my truth. And so to me, authenticity is a process of reclaiming your truth. And there is truth that you have before trauma, and there's truth that you have after trauma. And they're both equally important.
Yeah.
I wouldn't change who I've become, but I also really like who I was before. And they're both so valid. And the truth is, without the connection to that self, that integrated self, it's very difficult to come here and do what you're meant to do. It's very difficult to access purpose or alignment or clarity without connection to that self. And so for a really long time, for I would probably say like 30 years, I was very ashamed of who I was. I'm loud, I'm talkative, I'm emotional, I'm expressive, I have a temper, you know, all these things that people were very critical of. And so I absorbed that criticism and made it my inner voice. And what I realized is there's nothing wrong with who I am. It's just that it wasn't in resonance with those other people, or it was creating or causing, you know, internal discomfort for those people. And so rather than examining that internal discomfort, they made it my problem and said, "Oh, you're the problem, not the way I feel, it's you." And I realized over the last several years that ultimately, I'm here to be Zoe. I chose to be Zoe in this lifetime. I chose this body. I chose this identity. I chose this lineage. I created this soul contract to be exactly this person. And all I was doing was trying to be anything but her. I was trying so hard to be all the things that other people wanted me to be rather than who I actually came here to be. I actually could cry even just talking about it. And that's Zoe. Zoe cries a lot about lots of things. And there's nothing wrong with that because that empathy is my gateway to my intuition. I feel things deeply. And my ability to feel things deeply enables me to pick up on the vibration of emotion that other people experience and help them understand what they're experiencing, help them navigate their emotions, which is a pathway to intuition. So all of that to say, our authenticity is the thing ultimately that allows us to be here and do what we came here to do. I came here to be Zoe and do things that only Zoe can do. Touch the hearts of people that only Zoe can touch the hearts of exactly in that specific way. So rather than be so angry that I chose this body or this essence or this energy, I'm choosing to embrace those things and love those things and operate through those things to see where that takes me and see what I'm capable of. And so far, so good. Honestly, I did this work in my 20s and I did that whole masculine energy, fast paced, build an empire. If I'm not making 20K a month, I'm a fucking failure. Like I did all of that. And one day I looked at my husband and was like, I'm miserable. I'm anxious all day, every day. I was at the peak of my success. I was reaching those milestones, making all that money, being this like spiritual entrepreneur, you know, icon that I thought I was supposed to be. And I hated it. I was miserable. And it wasn't until I slowed down and took the space and said, this doesn't feel good. What does feel good? And all I did from that point forward was chase what feels good. And it led me back to me, to being myself. And that I think is one of the most important things that we can do. And I do believe that human design is one of the most useful pathways to understanding our internal methods of operation and who we came here to be before we were interrupted by life's experiences or trauma or circumstances. So a really big answer, really long answer to your question, but I think one that I couldn't answer without every single one of those words.
Yeah, I know. I love it. I love it. So, I mean, so many things came up for me because I mean, the caterpillar came up for me that is right in the cocoon, in the darkness. I mean, the butterfly is not going to come out unless you have the patience to be with the shadow parts of us, right? It's just, we see that in nature everywhere. Also, the gene keys, which has grown out of the human design as well. The big, big message here is that the gift is in the shadow. If you're not going to have the courage to spend some loving time and acceptance with the shadow of you, which is always some kind of fear for all of us humans. We all have those fears, some more, some less, right? You're not going to access that true essence of who you are. And I think, I mean, Carl Jung and all, I mean, we have everything in, even in deep psychology, it's right. When we keep suppressing the emotions and the shadow, it's going to come out nastier later on. Yeah, we can run away from it. We can distract ourselves. But at some point, life is like, okay, right? We're going to get that kick in the butt in some way. So, yeah, and I wasn't the same, right? When I started my coaching journey, I had left corporate or I was fired, actually. I wanted it. I manifested it. But I started also with these masculine programs, how to make, it was the same, like, oh, how to make 20K a month. Because, you know, it felt the most misaligned. Like ever, I spent so much money on it, but even money that I didn't have, you know, and I was like, ooh, something is wrong. And in one of those calls, actually, I don't really remember what it was, you know, where I was about taking action and doing the things. And then they come with these like, well, you have limiting beliefs. And at some point, the person was like, well, it sounds like you have some trauma to process. And I was like, I mean, it was actually good feedback, you know. But then everything that I felt pulled into was about energy, emotions, emotional acceptance. And it was a very uncomfortable time for quite some time, but I had to go through it. And now I'm still so cautious, have to be so aware not to fall back into this hyped up, like how to make X amount of money, because I always find myself losing my authenticity so quickly, because yes, money, making money is very important, right? But if I look at my path so far, every single time when I went into something with the main purpose of making money, it worked backwards. I kind of, it pushed me back actually in time in some way, because I started to question myself again more and all the things, or things didn't feel good. And now the less I consume content also, it's actually a very key thing for me. I still do, but very selectively now. I'm very discerning, you know? And especially, I have no more tolerance, I think, to follow people where it's this preachy one way. I just can't. People like you, it's a totally different thing, because I feel I can take up my own space and be who I am, because a role of a guide, healer, coach, whatever it's called, a therapist, is always to help you guide you to yourself, right? Nothing else. And listening is actually one of the most powerful, like you say, right? When you go to your therapist, you can just talk and talk and talk, because sometimes we just need to talk and talk and talk and talk. And I don't even need somebody's advice. Sometimes I just need to freaking talk, and then I have my own epiphany, you know? And when I have my own epiphany, it is so profound. But if somebody is telling me, even with the intuition, right, I can share people my intuitive insights, but only if they want that. If I'm like, you should do this, I'm getting this message for you. And I have had actually some experience, I guess, when I was in a vulnerable space, you know, when I was looking for the answers, I had some energy healers come into my world. I felt very manipulated, right? They were, it was this energy, I need them because they have the intuitive knowing for me. And so intuition can be, actually, that's something I want to talk to you about, like, can be very misused, right? Can you share a little bit about maybe some of your own
Oof.
experiences or insights?
Absolutely. I can't tell you how often I have clients come to me who say, somebody approached me in the grocery store and told me that my energy is messed up, or someone told me it's going to cost $3,000 to fix my chakras so I can find my soulmate or whatever. And it's so painful. And it's actually for that reason that I did not identify as psychic. I did not use that word for a very, very long time, because I just associated it with like charlatans, you know, like just people who were scamming others. And I find there's so much pain actually caused by healers, because what happens is they start, I believe most oftentimes, start the work because they genuinely want to be of help, but they quickly become, they're human, right? We're all human. And so they become attached to the idea of being needed, being wanted, being relied on, making money, whatever it is that is tickling their ego, whatever ego grabs onto and says, oh, we like that. Let's do more of that. It becomes very self-focused and self-serving. So one of the things that I really communicate to my audience is, I don't want you to need me. Like, doing session work is something that I enjoy and I love, and I love holding space for people and supporting them. But one of the first things I do, if you ever listen to my podcast, I hold real client sessions on the Mystic Rebel podcast. And I will very often start by saying, tell me where you're at with this. Tell me where you are sitting, because I don't want to approach someone without being able to understand how they feel about something, because they may not be ready to hear what's coming through. And consent is so important to me. I will never approach a person in the grocery store. I will never read somebody that has not asked me to. Having access to someone's energy is a privilege. And unless I'm making someone aware that I'm doing that, or they're asking me to, I'm not going to do it. And I think the same, if I may say this, actually, I think the same is true for myself. I'm sometimes very hesitant to tell people what I do for a living, not because I'm uncomfortable, but because I know they're immediately going to demand that I use my gift to do something for them. And that's really hurtful, actually, because I'm just trying to have a human experience. I'm just trying to get a haircut, or I'm just trying to, you know, walk my dog or buy something or whatever. And like I take a class on the weekends to spend time with my mom, and someone asked what I do, and I told them, and they said, well, go ahead, read me. And I was like, ah, you know, did you ask if I wanted to? Did you ask if I was in the space? Did you ask if this is a good environment? I believe in consent both ways. And I believe that consent, when it comes to accessing someone's energy, is necessary. And this is something that became clear to me a really long time ago. When I was in college, I had sort of like a surge of my abilities, and I felt very like out of control of my abilities. And I was sitting on the green of my college campus, and I saw a girl walk by who I knew who she was, but we were not friends. I knew who she was and who she was dating, but we were not in the same circle. We just went to like a small liberal arts school. And I saw her, and I immediately heard, oh, her boyfriend's going to break up with her in the next couple of days. And I remember thinking, I don't want to know that. That's not my business. And I don't want to, for myself, I don't want to carry around everyone's stuff. And I also don't think it's appropriate for me to have information about somebody's relationship that they might not already have. That feels pretty weird. So in that moment, I remember looking up at the sky and saying, please take that away. I don't want that anymore. I don't want to just know things. And from that day forward, it was like that. And obviously, like, I still have little moments of like harmless intuition, like the guy on the unicycle or whatever. Or, you know, if something is necessary for me to know, then I receive it. But I'm very selective about how I share information, when I share information. And also, my clients will often say, how often should I come back? Right? Like, how often should I be having session? And I always tell them without fail, you will know. I'm not here to sell you a package. I'm not here to sell you another session. I'm not here to guide you. You will know. You will know when you need to talk to me. And you will also know when you need to sit with yourself and ask yourself the questions and examine what feels right or true for you. And so clients that I've had for like 7 years, whenever they do contact me, they're like, I know I should probably be doing this on my own. I should be just, you know, asking myself, because they know that my goal is to help them wean off of me. Not that they need to rely on me, but at the same time, again, we're here on earth together, right? Like we're supposed to be doing this together, and there's nothing wrong with wanting validation or wanting to bounce something off of somebody or wanting to have some confirmation or get some clarity or have someone cheer you on. And that's a big part of what I do is like, I'm a cheerleader. I'm here to say you can do it. All you have to do is decide that you're going to. That's it. That's all we have to do. So I think ultimately reminding people that you're not a guru. I don't let people put me on a pedestal, and I receive a lot of praise, if I just say that bluntly, right? Like people, I'm sure you experience the same thing. People will say, thank you. You changed my life. You did this. Even people who just listen to the podcast, they're like, I've never had a session with you, but your session with this person changed my life. I got my divorce. I did everything I need to do. Thank you. And I always tell people two things. I can take no credit. It completely comes from somewhere else. I'm just a mouthpiece. And anything that people like about me is something that is true within themselves as well. Anything that you think is cool about me, the same is true of you. There's nothing about me that is any more special or any more different or any more magical than you. And that is so, so important to me, because it's not good for me as a human being to get put on a pedestal, and it's not good for other people to believe that whatever I'm doing or have the ability to do is somehow out of reach to them. So helping people be responsible for their own choices, their own timeline with their work. Those things are really, really, really important to me, because otherwise you can develop that dependence or that, like that hunger for those answers. And I'm the first person to tell my clients, like, hey, I'm going to refund you for the session, or I'm going to refund you for this email reading, because you're not ready to receive whatever's going to come through. You have more work to do on your own, or you already know the answer. You don't need me to answer this for you. I'm not here to take advantage of people. I'm here to genuinely support them. And I really believe it is because I operate that way that my work has genuinely supported me. I really feel that my personal success comes from the fact that I try to stay humble, that I try to stay connected, that I try to stay authentic, that I try to always remind people that they are themselves powerful, that they are themselves the source of creation in their own life. And they're just collaborating, co-creating with the external source. And I really do believe that those are the things that have helped me remain prosperous in more ways than one in my business.
And you just spoke to my soul. Because I have talked actually about this thing with the pedestal was a big topic for me, because I used to do that myself for a long time, also with money, you know, and then people that just talk about money. And one thing as well is also with testimonials. I think I'm very similar with you. Like, I barely share testimonials. It's because it's like people know if they want to work with me, right? And I get so many messages, and I don't feel sometimes it's also about privacy sometimes. I don't want to plaster every little comment that I get on my Instagram feed or in my emails. And yes, here and there, sometimes I'm like, yeah, I could share more testimonials. But I think in terms of sustainability, the humble way is actually more prosperous, I really believe, because I'm personally turned off when I check out somebody's Instagram feed. Sometimes people suggest people to me and I'm like, yeah, you should do this. And I look at it. And if everything is about these video testimonials and like over and over, it's like I need to be convinced here, or it's very persuasive, right? And it just feels off to me. And then also often it's like the main target's just about making money, right? And again, I love money. I think money's amazing, and I'm not going to be able to do my business and live my purpose if I'm not going to
Exactly.
have a good relationship with money and feel worthy to get compensated for the amazing work I do, right? But making that the main focus of everything has, yeah, it's always like it's like a turn off for me, you know? And that's why everything you say, because I said it so many times, like, we have a lot of dependency, codependency happening in coaching, like big time. Like, and you sign up for one thing and you cannot even relax with the thing because you're already being sold the next, because they're telling you without this, you're not going to be successful. You need this, and now it's going to get more expensive. And my best compliment I can receive is where, like you say, you don't need me anymore. And like you say, you come back when, yeah, book another session. Great. But I want you to trust myself. And when you do that, I've done my job well.
I have a I'm going to talk about a program very quickly, but just so everyone knows, I'm not selling this program to
Oh,
you.
but you can. I mean, obviously.
I have a 30-day program where I take people through a protocol based on mind hacking and universal laws and principles to help them activate their intuitive senses. And we're developing a new version of that that incorporates microdosing with a psychedelic-assisted therapist. I mean, there's so many. I know I work on this program all the time, but people ask me, when is level two going to come out? Like, when are you going to make level two? And I always tell my students, have you even continued to utilize the protocol of level one? Have you even continued to put those practices? Like, often they'll do it for maybe like another month or 2 months after the program. And then they're like, okay, I want the next one. And it's like, listen, I've given you
Everything.
all the tools. I did it in one class. Your job is to integrate these practices into your life so that your life revolves now around the belief that you are intuitive. That's all you need in order to be intuitive, is the belief that you are. So my work focuses not just on telling people like, hey, affirm it and it's true, because I don't think that's quite enough, because the brain is resistant to things that it doesn't believe. It's like,
Yeah, true.
why did I just say it and then it's true? So instead, we use subliminal reprogramming, we use mind hacking, we use, the principles of neuroplasticity. It's based off of like positive psychology and studies done at Harvard and all these different things. I really, 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 I mean, but it's also very woo-woo. Like, I send you spell jar kits and a big welcome box with like magical
Cool.
tools and all sorts of fun stuff. But ultimately, if you put these things into practice, your brain will change. Your spirit will change, your vibration will change. But if you're just looking for the next, the next, the next, you're not actually sitting with the work. You're not actually being with the work. And so I always tell my students, there's no level two. There's no level two. Maybe one day when spirit tells me, but right now spirit tells me there's just level one. And I want you to continue to utilize this protocol to continue to change your life. But I'm not here to upsell you on the next. I'm not here to. And listen, I have three employees. I have a marketing manager, a social media manager, an ops manager, and they run the show. I love them to death. And they are often like, we need to charge more for this, or we need to do this, or we need to develop this. And I'm always like, I'd rather make less money and just do what feels true. Like, that's really what's important to me. And
Amen.
it can be disappointing, right? When your boss says, I want to make less money because then you're not making more money. But also, I try to, only hire people who share my values and who aren't going to force me or want to force me to already at the end of level one try to sell them on the next thing, because that's not what feels right for me. And I think you and I, this conversation, this connection, like attracts like, this is evidence of the vibration matching. And I'm super excited for our conversation that we're going to have on my
Yeah, me
show.
too.
I think you're
So,
going to say incredible things. I think
yeah.
you're exactly the person that I want my audience to know, because we share values and that's so important. And I would much rather, and this is not a reflection of you in any way, I would rather have someone on my podcast that has 300 followers on Instagram than somebody who has 300,000, if I really believe that they are doing the work. And I think you can agree, you probably experienced this too. And I love talking about this. The spiritual space is not void of selfishness or, self-focus. Like, there are plenty of creators and practitioners out here who are one person when they hit record and another person when they turn off the camera. And that is difficult to see behind the curtain. And there's nothing we can do, right? I can't go around going, this person's a phony, because that's not what I'm here to do. All I can do is be the opposite and exude that vibration and share my truth. And there are probably people who listen to this conversation and think, like, I'm full of shit. And that's fine. You can totally think that. That's okay. And there are probably people who are like, this is my girl. I want to work with her. And I welcome those who feel called, and I honor those who don't, because I know that they are on their own path and I'm not here to define that. And then that applies to everything. My husband grew up inside of a very strict religion, the Mormon Church. And people always asked us, like, how could you even be married? Like, how could you marry each other? And on both sides, people were like, how could you marry such a weird spiritual girl? Or how could you marry someone who's like in a cult? And not me, him, like, people thought he was a cult. And we both knew we share values, we share beliefs, we share truth, and we don't care how the other person finds it. I don't need him to believe what I believe to feel valid in my path. And he feels the same way. And we just love each other and respect each other. And I see him be a beautiful, kind, compassionate, caring person every day. So whatever he decides to believe or not believe or whatever, that's his business. That's his path. I'm not here to interrupt him or change it. So I really think acceptance, tolerance, love, like live and let live, is one of the most important things that I stand by in this world. Like, don't do it my way, do it your way. And either way, I hope you get there. I hope you get
I
where you
love
want
it.
to go.
I love all of this. Thank you so much for this
Absolutely.
beautiful comment. I'm just like looking at the clock and it's like I could
Totally. I
keep
know.
talking for
We could
sure.
do this all day.
Yeah, exactly. And I was telling her in the beginning, we may look at the human design, but I'm not sure yet. But we'll do that maybe on your podcast episode. We can
I
talk a
would
little
love
bit more
that.
about human design. Yeah, I really share your values a lot, and this is something that I have put out recently more actually, and that's why I love the synchronicities that I'm also now attracting more people, where it's really the resonance.
Well, it's your
And
authenticity,
yeah,
right? Your
exactly. That's who I
authenticity is a
am, and
magnet.
exactly. And I cannot deny it. And even if as I'm speaking, I have goosebumps. That's my intuition, right? Confirming
Me too.
everything. So yeah, thank you so much. Is there anything else? So you have the Mystic Rebel podcast. You're more than welcome to share a link to your 30-day program. I think that's fantastic.
Thank you.
Your website is mirhipsi.com, and it's the underscore mirhipsi on Instagram where they can find you. Is there
Yes.
anything else you would like to share with the
I
listeners?
love you. I love you. I think you're an incredible host. I think you're an incredible person. I love everyone listening to this. I love you. That's all I want
Thank you. Thank you.
to
And I have one final question, which is kind of like
Yes.
this, but what's one final nugget of wisdom, from all the wisdom that you have received through your lifetime that you feel is the most important for the listeners?
When it comes to intuition, you are in charge of how you experience your gifts. You have the ability, just like I did, to say, Spirit, I don't want to do that. Or Spirit, I really want to do that. You have autonomy and agency over your gifts. Your gifts do not have autonomy and agency over you. So if there's ever anyone out there that's like, I'm scared to become intuitive because I don't know what it's going to do. All it's going to do is make you happier. All it's going to do is guide you toward your truth. And as long as you cultivate control and authority over your gifts, you're going to be totally safe. You're going to be totally fine. And if you need some help, I'm here to help you.
Oh, I love it. Thank you so much, Zoe. It was such a joy, such a pleasure. I learned so much myself. And you listeners, as always, thank you for being here with us. Thank you for your open-mindedness. And I'm excited to be with you all on the next episode.
Bye.
Ciao. Thank you for listening to this episode. And if you enjoyed what you heard today, then please subscribe, rate, and leave a review on iTunes. And if you also know someone that you know in your heart could benefit from listening to this podcast, then I invite you to please share and help me reach more conscious leaders so we together can create global impact. I truly appreciate you, and see you next time.